There are memories that we have that continue recurring because they are powerful in what they are associated with. Particularly for me, there are memories of things that I have experienced that are related to profound truths that I regularly encounter and re-encounter and re-encounter. So I'm going to start by telling you one of those memories, which I hope that you know that after being in this parish for 17 years, there's sometimes not a lot new that I can tell you. And the older I get, the more I repeat things without knowing them. So I'm going to tell you a memory, which I'm sure I've told you before. And then I want to relate it to the insight, and then the insight to what Jesus said in the gospel. The memory is the memory of having gone to a grade school to celebrate a mass for the entire school. And in this school, it was pre-K all the way through eighth grade. I remember, because the reading was something like this. It was a reading that was not going to be easy to explain, because it was an all-school mass. And I had in my congregation, I had all the way of teachers from adults, of course, all the way to pre-K. And one of the greater challenges is, how am I going to reach those everybody here with some image that is easily relatable? At that moment, I don't know why, but I thought of a merry-go-round. And the merry-go-round was an image that I've always considered very intriguing. And so I asked the kids, which there must have been 500-600 kids and teachers, people. And I asked the people, the kids, how many of you have ever been on a merry-go-round? And of course, I would say 90% of the entire congregation, the kids, lifted their hands up and said yes. And then I said, let me ask you a second question. How many of you really enjoyed being on a merry-go-round? This time, only about 60 or 70% raised their hand. And then I said, I promise, this is the last question. One more question. How many of you would like to permanently have a house built on a merry-go-round or a bed on the merry-go-round? This time, only a small portion raised their hands, and they were all pre-K and K. Okay? They were all pre-K and K. Now, I thought it was a curious thing that the more I probed, the younger the kids that were able to relate. And that began the insight that I would like to share with you. The insight is that boredom is a gift from God. Boredom is a gift from God. Now, why is boredom a gift from God? Consider these kids. I went up to the eighth graders, and let's start with the first graders. I went to the kindergartners and the pre-K and some of the first graders, and I said, why do you want to live permanently on a merry-go-round? And they say, ooh, it's so much fun. It's the music and the horses going up and down and the lights, and it's exciting. Okay. And then I noticed the very long-faced and or sour-faced eighth graders. And so I went over to them and put the microphone on them and said, why do you guys not want to do this? Like the first grader, I mean like the pre-K and the K. What's wrong with the merry-go-round? Their answer was, it's boring. It doesn't go anywhere. After a while, the music drives you crazy. The lights start driving you crazy. And those darn horses going up and down. No. Horrible. And I thought, interesting. Isn't it normal then that the younger you are psychologically, the easier it is to entertain you. And the older you get, the easier it is for you to get bored. Think about it. What does it take to entertain a little baby? Take a little rattle. And go, click, 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 click. And the baby go, ah, 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 ah. That sounds like more like a monkey, but you get the idea. Okay, you get the idea. The baby is just thrilled with a little, you know, bells ringing and stuff like that. Now try to use the same toy with a 3 or 4 year old. Doesn't work. He would be totally bored by that. And he should be. There would be something wrong with a 4 year old that is fascinated with an infant's toy. You see, God made his personality to be bored as he or she grows. It would be very bad if we were still fascinated by the things that fascinated us when we were younger. I look back, and periodically, I'm going to be 66 pretty soon, and I look back at my 20s, as even my teens. And when I look back at my teens, I think, and some of the, I work with a lot with teenagers, and they're really excited about this or that. And I have to, a lot of times, feign or pretend that, oh, cool, because I'm bored to tears with most of that stuff. And if you think, when I think about it in my own head, as I go back throughout these 60-some years, it's not year by year. It's more phase by phase that I look back at the things that I found fascinating when I was in my 20s or 30s, 50s, 40s, and now that I'm in my 60s. And I think, how could I have been fascinated by that? And I love the saying, been there, done that, bought the t-shirt. You know, you get to the point that it's boring. Things are boring. And I've come to understand that God inspires boredom. Boredom is a gift. It's a gift that God is giving you to tell you that the things that you are trying to choose are not necessarily worthy of your attention, or that you're doing them for the wrong reason. If I tried to enjoy what teenagers really enjoyed, I would be lying. Now I can tend to pretend, and that's okay. It's okay. If you're playing with a little kid, it's okay to pretend you're having fun. You know, you don't want to, you know, be with a toddler and say, okay, go get the ball. You know, you want to at least make believe that you're having fun. So it's the reasoning behind it, because you're not doing it for yourself. You're not doing it now for the good, the love, and the good of another. And so think, if you start thinking through the things that have fascinated you in the past and things that no longer fascinate you, you'll see that it's God's way of saying, move on. Move on. If you're doing it for the wrong reason, in other words, if you're doing it because you still think you're supposed to be having fun and not for the love of another, it's time for you to move on. And God does that precisely because He loves you. And He refuses for you to remain a spiritual runt. He cannot stand to continue to look at you. And no matter how happy you are at any given point in your life, He has to, I'm getting a Spanish word only, lo tiene que derrumbar. He has to break it apart. He has to break it up. Periodically that happens to me. I just get Spanish. And he has to break it apart. And why? Because you're supposed to be moving up. And a lot of us cry and, you know, I don't want to move on. You know, and stuff. I mean, we throw temper tantrums, and I spent a lot of time, and now I'm bored. You know, and that is normal. Normal. Now, what does that have to do with this, with the gospel, with Jesus says, "I am the bread of life." Every single one of us inside wants to feel alive. You want to feel alive. You don't want to feel dead. Now think of it. There's a relationship between feeling dead and feeling bored. It's almost a synonym, right? It's almost a synonym to be, I feel dead, to feel bored. So when Jesus says, I am the bread of life, He's not just talking about physical life. Because remember, Jesus said one time, I have come that you may have life and have it to the full. Now, what's the implication of that? That you don't. That you have it to the half. That you have it to the quarter. That you just don't have the whole thing. And you feel empty. You feel bored. And he said, I have come that you may have the fullness of life. And so when he says, I am the bread of life, he's also talking about, I have come so that you don't have to feel dead. So that you may grow into the fullness of what I meant you to be. And as you grow, you have to go through boredom. It's necessity. Otherwise, if you would stay with entertained, you would remain with what you were. And a lot of times, there's a principle in psychology, the principle of diminishing returns. When you keep doing something, and you got a lot out of it, and you want to continue to get a lot out of it, so you continue pushing the same bar, even when you're getting nothing, because that's all you know. And you keep pushing the same bar and you get bored. Until you decide to, the psychologists call it cognitive lock-in. Cognitive lock-in is when you will continue to do the same thing to give you pleasure or joy, because you're locked in until you get to the point that you're so dad burn frustrated that you'll try something else. And that's the way that God does it. He says, he basically is saying, is tired yet? Oh, no, well, keep knocking your head against the wall. See how long it takes for you to be happy. And so we do that. And the reason we do that, and he lets us do that, because he keeps inviting us forward. He keeps inviting us higher. He keeps inviting us to deepen our relationship with him. And to the extent that we refuse that invitation, we will be frustrated and bored. God in himself is constant, electrifying excitement. And there's nothing more fascinating than God. Nothing. It's most of the time the fact that our heads don't understand that, and we have a picture of God that's basically some kind of low picture of some mannequin of God, and we think that's the real God. But the more you get connected with God and go through the boredom and stick to it to try and find the real living God, then you begin to understand that I have come to bring you life and that have it to the full. That's why we go through these cycles. And you go through them with everything, not just with things. We go through them with relationships, and we go through it even with the relationship with God himself. Let me give you an example. And this is an example I've used before, but I like it so much that I think I used it about 2 years ago. So I think it's okay to bring it back. It's this. No, this is not for money. This is PVC pipe. Now, I want you to imagine that these two pieces of PVC pipe are people. This is the boy PVC pipe, and this is the girl PVC pipe. Okay? And they one day walk around, and I'm holding in my hand 2 4-inch pieces of PVC pipe. And they walk around one day, and the 2 pieces of PVC pipe fall in love. And they want to be together. All they want is to be together. And so the PVC pipes come together. And now they are together. They are really happy PVCs. Extremely happy right now because they are in full contact with each other. They are together. Right? How long will they stay together? And you know how long they will stay together? As long as my hand doesn't get tired of holding them together. Now, as soon as I get tired, my hand gets tired, what will happen? I would let them fall, but then when I would have to pick them up, okay? They will fall away from each other. Why? Because they were trying to connect in a way that they were never meant to connect. They were trying to connect to each other directly. And PVC pipe was never meant to connect that way. What did they refuse to connect to? They tried to connect together. But what did they refuse to connect to? Well, what they refused to connect to is a connector. Right? I have in my hand a 4-way connector. Now, if the 2 little boy PVC pipe and the girl PVC pipe want to be together, What they have to do is they have to not connect directly. They have to connect to the connector. And once they connect to the connector, they no longer need anything to hold them together. Now, relationships are like that. People fall in love, and they grab each other, and they go, I love you, I love you, and I can't live without you. And it's very emotional. I've said this to you before, I always think it's so funny that we use the verb to fall. I fell in love with you. It's never, I walked, I ran, I jumped. You know, it's, I'm so sorry, I fell. Why? Because what we're doing is we're talking about our feelings. And nobody can make themselves feel anything. You can't get up in the morning and say, I choose to feel this way. So you can't promise how you're going to feel. I tell that when I do weddings, and there's several couples here whose weddings I'm going to do sooner or later, you're going to hear it. You cannot promise to be in love. You cannot. Because being in love, we're talking about your feelings. Well, as a matter of fact, people usually say that, I have feelings for you. I hate that song, you know? Feelings. Anyway. You can't promise. It would be the same thing if I were to say to you, I promise you, I will never have another headache in my life. I can say it, but it is meaningless. Why? Because I cannot control my headaches. Since I cannot control my headaches, I cannot promise what I cannot control. I cannot control my feelings. Therefore, I cannot promise my feelings. Now, please understand, I always tell couples, I hope you live in romantic mush for the rest of your lives. I know, I hope you do, but you can't promise that. So what are you promising? You're promising that you, for the rest of your life, you're going to do what Jesus did. On the cross, Jesus connected with God, and he was concerned about us. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. I always notice, this fascinates me. Notice that Jesus did not forgive us directly. I find that fascinating. You know what direct forgiveness would have been? I forgive you. Between the three of us. The two of us. Him and us. I, verb, subject. Subject, object. Who's he talking to? The connector. Father, forgive them. Jesus. Father, them. He's talking to the connector. He is making a decision to connect with his Father to care about us. That he can promise. You can promise your decisions. You can't promise your feelings. It's the same thing with relationships. You want to be connected to somebody? You got to connect with God. You want to be full? You don't want your love relationship to be disappointing. By the way, most psychologists in studies that I've read say that the feeling of love lasts anywhere from 3 to 5 years. That's why there's so many that people say, well, I fell out of love with you. Of course you did. If that's all you're basing your marriage on, you're dead meat. You're just dead meat. What are you going to do? You connect with God. And when you connect with God, guess what happens? You find out that you not only can connect here and here, but God's got a whole bunch of different connections. And all of a sudden, other people can connect, and other people can then connect to you. And all of a sudden, your love life is amazing. Why? Because you're connecting the way that you were built to. And now, your life is no longer boring. Because you have connected to the source of life, which is the connector. Jesus, God, is the bread of life. He is the bread of life. He does mean literally you're not going to die in terms of the resurrection. But he also means that your spirit is not going to die because of boredom. That you are connected to life itself. And even when your body starts falling apart, you still have life in you. Because you are connected to life. I have met people on their deathbed that are more alive than many people I have seen who live bored to death. That's what Jesus is talking about. He is the bread of life. This is nice. When he says, if you eat of this bread, you'll never die. He's not talking magic. When people hear that, they go, hey, people, I see people dying all the time. What's he talking? He's not talking about that. Think. He's not talking like that. He's talking about the fullness of life, which is not only biological. It's spiritual and psychological. And the way you do it is by connecting to the source of life. If you don't connect, and this I'll close. If you don't connect, you're going to be like a battery. You know, you start out, every time you put a new battery in something, it starts like, choo, 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 you know, right? And it goes, goes, goes. But what happens? The battery runs out. And why? Because it's not connected. And you can't have energy if you're not connected. Duh. And that's the way God made us. So, next time you feel bored, ask God to help you to understand the source of your boredom. Now, don't say, oh God, I'm bored. Take it away from me. It's not going to happen. Right? A lot of times God says, no, be with it for a while. I want you to be bored. I want you to experience the emptiness before you jump up onto anything else that's superficial. Be present. Even to the boredom. Because he's there. And you will find him. And he will take you deeper. And he will take you to a place, I think we call it heaven, but he will take you a place where life is full the way it was meant to be. He is the bread of life, not just physical, your psychological and your spiritual life. Connecting to him, you go through boredom. You don't jump over it. Jesus went through the crucifixion. He didn't just connect to God and go, yay! Okay? He went through the crucifixion. You go through boredom, and you come to the other side of joy. And that happens in your life over and over and over again. And it will happen on the day you die. You will connect to the ultimate suffering, and you will come out in the other side on the fullness of life. If you were to ask Jesus, why did you come? He would answer you this way. I came so that you may have life and have it to its fullness. Thank you for listening.